Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and if you've been seeing more and more talk of a heroin epidemic, you're not alone. In fact, do a Google trend search for that phrase, and you'll see basically nothing from 2004 until late 2012, then a bit of a jump until earlier this year when there was an explosion in the use of the term. So let's assess the heroin epidemic, both as real drug problem, policy challenge, and media narrative. Michael Tracy is a journalist who has written about the recent rise in heroin use for Al Jazeera and Vice, among others. He's expressed concern that the media coverage and new policies mean we are falling into some of the same traps with heroin that we did with other drugs in the failed drug war. Michael Tracy, welcome to WNYC.
Great to be with you, Brian.
And in a few minutes, we'll hear from a former addict who's a long-term leader in drug treatment in New York City, and he'll give us some historical perspective and discuss the various other ways to tackle the problem. But, Michael, here is Governor Cuomo talking about the issue. He gave the speech standing in front of a podium emblazoned with the words, heroin epidemic, and he began by adopting the language of addiction.
Step one is to admit the problem. Stop the denial. New York State has a terrible problem with heroin. And it's not that it's just a national problem. It is a New York-specific problem. One-third of all the heroin in the United States that was seized last year by the DEA was seized in the state of New York. Number of deaths since 2010 has doubled. And as you heard from the Lieutenant Colonel, well, we had heroin in the 60s. This heroin is worse. It is more potent than ever before. It's less expensive than ever before. You can get a heroin bag for $5, $10, and it is instantly addictive.
Governor Cuomo, and using the language of the 12-step program in particular, some pretty shocking stuff in there. One-third of all the heroin that was seized last year by the DEA was seized in New York State. And yet you're arguing in your piece that there's a media narrative that falls into the old war on drugs pattern. Are you saying this is being ginned up by authorities?
I certainly wouldn't say that there's no basis whatsoever to any of the concern that's being expressed now by public officials and law enforcement about heroin, rates of heroin use in the United States and in New York specifically. But I do think that when elected officials and law enforcement and police speak up a quote-unquote epidemic, it's important to be precise about how that term is defined, especially when it's being used in a public health context. So if you have people who are seen as having great authority, like Governor Cuomo or the local police chief or so forth, issuing assertions of the existence of a heroin epidemic as established fact without necessarily providing substantiation or any empirical basis for those claims, you could see how it might breed misguided beliefs in the public. And I think there are echoes of that.
Are you questioning his stats then? If one-third of the heroin seized last year by the DEA was in the state of New York, well, the percentage may be the same as in the past. We don't know that. But the number of deaths since 2010 has doubled. It's less expensive than ever before. You could get a bag for $5, $10. It's instantly addictive. It's worse than heroin of the past. I mean, he's making very specific comparative assertions there. Have you done research to debunk some of those?
I wouldn't want necessarily presume to debunk any one of the any one in particular of the stats that he used in that speech. I would say that in that same speech, he mentions that children and youths are particularly susceptible to the alleged uptick in heroin use over the past year or two. And the Centers for Disease Control, which is the federal government's main authority on public health data, just last month released data, its findings showing that the percentage of heroin use among U.S. teens has actually decreased since 2011, between 2011 and 2013. So I don't think you would have gotten that impression from listening to Cuomo's speech, and the same with Governor Christie's speech and other officials in the area.
And at the same time, arrests have gone up. You note in your article that earlier this year there were at least 325 arrests over an eight-week period with 47 police departments participating. Is that a national stat?
That's in New Jersey, in North Jersey specifically. Three counties in New Jersey.
Right. So are you arguing that usage is actually starting to go down now after the epidemic peaked a couple of years ago, and yet enforcement and arrests are going up, so we have this war on drugs mismatch? Is that kind of the heart of your concern?
I think that's approaching my concern, yes. I think it's undeniable that there have been very aggressive enforcement strategies implemented over just the past few months. I'm not personally equipped to conduct a public health survey and really give you definitively what the current usage rates are. But there's no doubt that, especially with that New Jersey operation you mentioned, that was a multi-jurisdictional operation in three counties bordering New York City. And what they did was they arrested at least 325 people in this month-and-a-half-long sting. And 280 of the arrestees, according to the government officials, were users only. So they were not involved in distribution or anything else other than just personally possessing heroin. And so these are the very sorts of people that Cuomo and others have been saying need to be treated with medical empathy or be treated as principally suffering from a medical issue, yet they're being arrested and being thrust into the criminal justice system.
In fact, you mentioned that in Bergen County there's been a program to publicly share the names and hometowns and ages and photos of people who have been arrested for heroin use. Actually, I'm not sure I got that from your article. We might have gotten that from another source. But do you know about that program?
That was from my article.
That
the Bergen County Prosecutor's Office released a press release detailing the displaying the mugshots of all the people who were arrested in that multi-agency sting. And
I mean, this is what they do with sex offenders.
Exactly.
Not so individual drug users.
It's undeniably a method of public shaming. And when the criminal justice apparatus is being deployed in furtherance of that goal, I think that raises some serious public policy questions. And I think, you know, part of what I'm getting at is we do need to step back a minute and try to just evaluate dispassionately what's going on here before we allow ourselves to just be enmeshed in this kind of spiral of drug interdiction that failed so many times in the past.
Though we should mention that at the same time, Bergen County has also set up a special court to handle heroin convictions and is looking for ways to provide more treatment services. The county prosecutor said, quote, "We recognize that recovering from a heroin addiction is a fail-win-fail-win process. The last thing we want is for most of these users to be saddled with a criminal conviction." So at least there's that level of sensitivity.
Right, but you know, declining to saddle an arrestee with a criminal conviction doesn't expurgate any of the social media images that came out with their photos or their places of residence and so forth. So that's going to be on the internet regardless of what they do in the aftermath of the arrest.
No criminal conviction, but eternal public shame.
Indeed.
As we start to discuss response and treatment, let's bring in another guest, Howard Josepher, president and CEO of Exponents, a rehab center that focuses on individual care for recovering addicts, which Josepher is one himself, as the site points out. And full disclosure, Howard Josepher is my second cousin. Howard Josepher, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. Glad to be here.
And before we talk about Exponents and some of the historical perspective that you have, since you've been working on addiction and recovery for decades, do you want to react to what we were just discussing? The question over whether this may be on some level another government and media overreaction to some drug use out there, another, you know, attempt for political purposes or an overreaction of fear or whatever to get another war on drugs branch going beyond what's needed. You know, Exponents, I know, deals with a lot of individuals. So you're on the ground and you're probably in a fairly good position to say whether there's a new heroin epidemic or whether that phrase from Governor Cuomo is overreach.
Well, it's not exactly a new heroin epidemic. What it is that as we've clamped down on opioid prescriptions, that creates an opening for the heroin cartels to push their product. People is finding it harder to get the prescription opiates, and so there's a need, and the cartels are filling that need with, yes, the governor's right, less expensive and more potent heroin to create a mark market for themselves. So that's why we're seeing maybe an uptick in overdoses and heroin usage. But it's like the problem was there all along with people being addicted to these opiate medications. Now that it's harder to get, they're turning to heroin for it.
And let me play. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Did you want to finish your thought?
The sad thing is that we're going about it in the same way that we have now realized was the wrong way to go about it, by criminalizing and punishing the person who has basically a disease of addiction. By punishing them, we're just going to fill up our prisons again. What the governor did do was to tighten some laws that maybe will allow more people into treatment as they'll be able to get their insurance, but they're not expanding the treatment programs at all. So there's going to be waiting lists that might come out of this because they didn't put any money into treatment.
Here's another clip of the governor from that same news conference talking about why, in his opinion, this era of heroin use is different from those of the past.
The old heroin problem affected primarily what we called older people, 28 to 30 years old, older in the spectrum of users. This heroin epidemic, we have teenagers, and it's getting younger and younger and younger, and heroin is becoming more and more available.
So, Howard, between the two clips of Cuomo that we played, we have all these historical comparisons. It's addicting younger and younger users today. It's becoming more and more available. In the earlier clip, he said it's instantly addictive, suggesting it's actually more potent heroin than in the past. With your personal and professional experience reaching all the way back to the 1950s, how do you see today's uptick in heroin use compared to what came before?
Well, the rhetoric actually sounds a great deal like the same rhetoric that was used during the crack epidemic, that it's incredibly potent, that you get addicted by using it just one time, and that it's young people who are using it. So it's the same rhetoric that we used in the past. And in that way, I don't think that it's really relevant. I think the idea is that we keep going about it by punishing people who have a problem. The question that needs to be asked is, if there are so many more young people using heroin, if so many more people are self-medicating, what is it that they're self-medicating? Let's try to deal with the root of the problem instead of just the symptoms of the problem. Why are people using drugs? In my understanding from my own history, my own experience, is that people who use drugs habitually are self-medicating their pain, their anxiety, their tremendous discomfort. And if we could focus on that, as opposed to that, you know, that they're bad people, that they're criminal, we should, you know, make them into criminals. If we could focus on the root of the problem, what are people self-medicating, maybe we can find other and better ways to address that.
So to that socioeconomic and roots of the problem point, here is one more clip of Cuomo. Sort of a startling framing on his part of who is self-medicating with heroin compared to the past. Listen.
It's also not an inner city problem. It's not a poor people problem. It's not a problem that happens over there. It's a problem that is all throughout the state, more so in affluent suburbs with white teenagers from affluent middle-class families. And it is spreading like fire through dry grass.
Governor Cuomo. So Howard Josepher with us from the Rehab Group Exponents, and Michael Tracy, who's been reporting on the heroin uptake for Vice and Al Jazeera. Howard, do you want to comment on that socioeconomic change for who is self-medicating? Do you see it at Exponents? Do you have any analysis of it?
Well, in this instance, I do agree with the governor in that the availability is across the economic board. For many years, people in, let's say, better socioeconomic levels were able to get their opiates legally, either through prescription or maybe not so legally, by raiding family members' medicine cabinets or neighbors' medicine cabinets to get the opiates. And so, yes, you have people on all levels who are self-medicating their pain, people who obviously are in great discomfort, because to take a drug habitually every day, you're going to have to sustain that kind of a habit. You're going to have to do some pretty nasty things. And so it's sad that that has to happen that way, but that's how desperate people are for the relief of their depression, of their state that is so discomforting to them. And you know, that's what we've got to start talking about. We're dealing with the surface of the problem and not with the roots.
Michael, I wonder if you want to jump in on this too. And another observation we could make, since the governor talking in such compassionate terms about people who are, you know, middle class and suburban, it's not just a poor people problem anymore. Because it's a middle class problem, because it's a white people problem, all of a sudden there's this big response, compassionate response. You know, I remember the 1990s when black and Latino teenagers were committing a lot of crime, and the tabloids would run headlines like super predators. And then as soon as Columbine happened and some of those other shootings that were done by white suburban kids, the national narrative changed, and it changed into how are we failing our children, instead of labeling them the problem and super predators. And it looks like the same thing is happening now with heroin.
Yeah, I think one thing I've observed is that officials tend to discuss heroin in relation to white users as the drug itself possessing some form of evil, or being a vehicle for the degradation of the moral character of the person who possesses it, whereas for among people of color who have been charged with heroin crimes, generally they're thought of somehow intrinsically criminal, and that's what led them to the substance abuse or use. So I definitely think that there is some truth to what you just stated. And I would also comment on something that the gentleman mentioned a few minutes ago, which was that he senses a parallel between the rhetoric that was used by public officials to condemn previous drug quote-unquote scourges and the current rhetoric of today. I would draw a certain distinction. I do think that there has been an overt effort on the part of many prominent public officials and elected officials to explicitly try to address the heroin issue in compassionate terms. So the rhetoric has changed, according to my reporting. The only difference is the public policy has not tracked with the rhetoric. So in a sense, it's even more perverse in that they're using these kind of compassion-based phraseologies, and yet bears no relation to what's actually happening on the ground level with police and law enforcement and public policy.
And maybe to this point, Deborah in Levittown, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Deborah.
Good morning. I wanted to add something personal to the conversation.
Please.
My son is a heroin addict. As of this morning, he is back in prison for the third time for breaking parole and using heroin again. This kid has been given, he has a middle-class background, he's been given all the love and support through these trials. He's been in program after program. He is a criminal. There is no way to say he is the victim, he is sick, he is ill. He's a criminal. He has violated people. He has stolen pocketbooks off women's arms. He has shoplifted. He has assaulted. This is a problem of criminal proportions. And sometimes, you know, being supportive and loving, it just lets them make a fool out of you. And, you know, as I said, he's been in program after program. Nothing has helped. And we're back on our third cycle of prison visits. And it's just It's heartbreaking.
But Deborah, let me ask you a question. And it sounds, as a parent myself, unbelievably heartbreaking. Not having been through this, can't even imagine. But are you saying that the drug usage itself should be seen as criminal activity, or just that it's so dangerous because people who are addicted are more likely to be stealing other people's stuff and things like that to support their habit?
Well, he has done terrible things to support his habit. He has shared with me some of the things he's done, and they just, I mean, the public needs to be protected too. I'm his mother, and I want people to be protected from a predator like him.
Yes.
Because when he was released from prison back in November, we gave him every ounce of love and support, and he was given the opportunity to work for a great company, and he was living in a fantastic place once he was released from the halfway house. None of this stuff helped. None of this stuff kept him off drugs. He was in a drug program. There's a program out on Long Island called CARE, like Center for Addictive Recovery, something. None of this helped. And I don't know where you draw the line between what he needs and the public's right to be protected from him.
What a horrible dilemma to have to deal with, and especially as a parent. But Deborah, thank you very much for being open about it. Howard Josepher, you wanted to jump in on that?
Yeah, I might say, well, that's a very sad story, and I would encourage this parent to not give up hope, because I was that person many years ago where, yes, I did turn to crime to support my habit, and I had many, many attempts at turning my life around that failed over and over until one time it worked. And so I encourage her to not give up hope, and that it may take a number of different programs. But it underlines, you know, the way we have to look at addiction as a chronic health condition, that relapse is a part of the addiction cycle. But the important thing for us is to focus on engaging people. And we have more programs, more evidence-based programs now than we've ever had in the past. We've even got programs now that are willing to work with people while they're still using, while they're active. These are called harm reduction drug treatment, and it's definitely an advance in our ability to engage and work with people.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because, as I well know, you've been one of the leaders in the harm reduction movement, which is kind of an alternative response to simple tough love or to the 12-step program, which tells you have to give it up completely in order to ever recover. And I'm sure you and a lot of people saw that Valentine to the harm reduction movement in the Times over the weekend, prominent piece. The crux of that piece, quote, "Tough love might look like an appropriate response, but it often backfires by further damaging the frayed connections to the people to whom the child is closest." But, Howard, it's a difficult line to navigate. Where is the line between trying to meet an addict where he or she is and do experiment after experiment until something works? The line between that and enabling somebody to continue to be self-destructive.
Well, there's one thing. I mean, my understanding is if you do the crime, you do the time. Meaning if you steal something from somebody or you hurt somebody, you should be responsible for that. You should be punished for that. But for the mere possession of a small amount of drugs for your own personal use, you should not be punished from that. That we should decriminalize that, so we could really start working with people and help them to come out of their addiction without like driving them into the underground. According to the United States government, 90% of the people who need help with their drug problem do not get it. And one of the reasons that is that we make it so difficult. The barriers are so high for people to enter treatment. For many reasons, they may not be ready to give up drugs. Well, let's engage them in ways that maybe they don't have to give up the drug, but we can reduce crime, we can reduce the healthcare costs. We can reduce transmission of diseases like HIV and hepatitis C. We could be doing an awful lot more in working with these people, even if they're not ready to get off drugs.
All right.
And in the long run, it'll be a savings, both of human life and of money.
The case for harm reduction. And we will have to leave this ongoing conversation there for today with the rising use of heroin over recent years, at very least, as prescription drugs, those opiates, have become more expensive or less available to more people. And what do we do about it? We keep talking about it. We heard those clips of Governor Cuomo. We've spoken to Michael Tracy, who's been covering this for Vice and Al Jazeera, and Howard Josepher from Exponents. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Brian.